Welcome back to the In the Dugout podcast. My name is Jason Ward alongside Joey Nagel, and we are sitting here after a 7-3 run on the West Coast. It's an off day. Red Sox are coming back to Fenway, and I don't know about you, Joey, but I am feeling fantastic about this Boston Red Sox baseball team.
Yeah, vibes are high once again. If you had told me that they were going to go 7-3 on this West Coast trip, I would not have believed you. Because every year it seems like a West Coast trip just kills this team, especially in 2019, the last time they opened up on the road. That really just ruined their season from the get-go. But it was huge to see them take care of business. They didn't play amazing baseball throughout, but a couple ugly wins in there. But that's the mark of a good team. If you can win ugly, that means you're good at winning.
Exactly. And I forget if I actually said it in our predictions episode, but you know, looking at this West Coast set that we had in front of us, we did exactly what best case scenario would have been. Like, you split the Mariners series. That's exactly what you want. You sweep the A's like you needed to, and then you win 2 out of 3 from the Angels. Like, that is ideal across the board, and them getting that done is huge. You got momentum coming back to Fenway. You're coming back to Fenway after a 12-2 victory. So it's just huge the way that they wrapped up the West Coast trip and the way that they played throughout the whole trip. I mean, there are some downsides. We will get to the Trevor Story injury and some of the defensive problems. But right now, just soaking in the fact that we have been playing really good baseball overall. And again, the record and the stats coming into Fenway are more than you could ask for. So we're going to start out. We got to start talking about the A's series because we didn't get to cover that. And then we'll talk about the Angels series. But yeah, that A's series, you sweep the A's, you needed to sweep the A's. That is what a good baseball team does, is they beat up on the bad teams and win the games that you're supposed to win. You win all 3 of those games. It's huge. They weren't all the prettiest, but, you know, a win's a win at the end of the day, and a sweep's a sweep. So you're feeling pretty good regardless. In that game 1, Tanner Houck was nasty. I believe we recorded right before that game happened, and we were talking about how Houck was the last guy who needed to have a quality start to go 5-for-5 in quality starts to start the season in the rotation. And sure enough, Houck probably has the best start of all of them. Goes 6 innings, no runs, 10 Ks. Yeah, it's Oakland, but that's still a really good start. And then Chase Anderson gets the 3-inning scoreless save to shut out the A's. The A's also had 5 errors in that game. So, you know, it's not the best level of competition. It was kind of embarrassing, but it was fun. I'm glad we were on the winning side of that. Duran was running all over the place. He had 3 stolen bases. But yeah, despite how bad the A's were, it's still good to get a win like that and have a start like that from Tanner Houck.
Yeah, that game was very uneventful based off, you know, past the 3rd inning once the A's had made their 5th error. Duran was just kind of tooling with them.
Yeah.
He was 3-for-3 with 3 stolen bases by the top of the 3rd inning.
Yeah.
Yeah, the A's are poverty. This game makes the next 2 look even worse, in my opinion. We'll get to that now, I guess.
You're not wrong. So that's how a win should look against the Oakland A's, a 9-0 blowout where they make A's make 5 errors. Game 2, Sox fans had to sweat that one out a little bit. That one goes into extras. Brian Baio started that game. He gave up 2 2-run homers. All the runs he's given up this year have been from 2-run homers. So if he stops throwing the 2-run homer pitch, we're looking pretty good in that regard. But outside of Baio, the bullpen was really good. Kenley was a little shaky. We'll get into that some more. But yeah, the game goes to extras. Then Cora goes full, like, masterclass managing. Double switches everywhere. Everyone on the bench came into the game at one point because he forfeited the DH spot because he moved Tristan Casas out of it. And so then the pitcher had to hit, but he was double switching, so the pitcher spot never came up because you had no one left on the bench. It was wild to watch. It was purely a stupid game all around. Trevor Story did have 2 doubles in that game, which was good because I believe that was the game we faced the lefty. That's what Trevor Story's job was to beat up on lefties. Shout out Josh Minkowski. He was super clutch in that one with 2 innings pitched at the end, keeping the A's off the board in extras, which is not an easy task with the double, the extra inning second base ghost runner, zombie runner rule. Last year's Red Sox lose that game 100%. That I still, looking back on it, don't know how we won that game. I don't think that you would have won that against a team other than the A's. The A's kind of, it was a great play by Josh Winkowski, but they had the runner on third base and it was a chopper back to Winkowski, and he catches the runner held up in between home and third. And you know, he was clutch in getting out of that, and then the Red Sox pieced together a run to go up 5-4 and end up winning that game. But yeah, that game was ridiculous. Like after watching it and after posting about it, I'm like, that was the worst like win ever. But it's again, like I said, a win's a win, counts the same.
Yeah, that game was really stupid. That's all I have to say about it. It was stupid. If you want a headache, go read the box score. That game ended at like midnight, and I was just after that game, I was like, yeah, it's time for bed. It's time for bed. None of this. I don't need to see it anymore. Shout out to Winkowski. He shoved. He didn't throw a single ball in that performance either. Did
I
not
forgot
throw a
about that. That is pretty wild, especially in a high leverage spot like that. Extra innings, guy on second, not throwing a single ball is crazy. But that's good. Like you, obviously, you know what Josh Winkowski did for us last season in those high leverage roles. There was a question mark on his name whether he could do that again this year. They were talking about putting him in the rotation, ends up back in the bullpen, ends up doing that, and you got Josh Winkowski as one of your most reliable guys in the back end of the bullpen again. So that's huge from him. And huge to get that win because that I think changes winning 2 out of 3 from the A's doesn't hit the same that sweeping the A's does. So that was a key game. And then the next game, also stupid in its own way because we only were able to score one run. But you know, again, a win is a win. Nick Pivetta dominates the Oakland Athletics. Nick Pivetta shoves against the A's, and he shoved in that game. 5 innings pitched, 0 runs allowed. Jarren Duran went 4-for-4. The bullpen was great. Kenley was shaky again. The defense was not that good. We had 2 errors in that game. I do want to, now that I brought it up 2 times, I do want to talk about Kenley Jansen because he did get multiple saves in that series, but it was not really comforting to watch him on the mound. He looked like he was not the Kenley Jansen that he was last year and the Kenley Jansen he's been in his career. He was very shaky. His velocity was down significantly. Last year, he came out, he was throwing 95, 96, and people are like, where did this come from? And now he was down like 89 on the cutter. Like he was really sitting around 90. That velocity being down is not good. He was talking about how his back was still kind of flaring up and still bothering him, but at least this time he was able to go out there. And again, you can talk about him being shaky, but at the end of the day, he got the save. So they're both times. So there is that. But it is really concerning to see Kenley Jansen not be super dominant on the mound, not be super, you know, healthy looking. This is the problem that I've mentioned in all of our episodes so far. Goes back to the predictions episode where I think that he is not in a position to be fully like healthy for all 162. I don't think he's going to be able to pitch in every save opportunity. He's already had to sit one out. And the fact that he comes out shaky like that is really concerning.
Yeah, he probably doesn't get those saves if it's any other team except the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah.
Nothing really encouraging out of Kenley so far, especially the drama from spring training and from the Seattle series. It doesn't help. It doesn't help. You could sp if you're really looking for it, you can spin it as, oh, he's disinterested. He's not really trying out there. We don't know that. But he looks like he just looks out of shape, in my opinion. You can see that with the velo down. But he also said he was pitching himself into shape, which, that's a lame excuse, but he is a vet. He's old. He's made of duct tape at this point. So
Yeah.
he could be right, but there are not going to be any easy saves this year.
No, it reminds me of Craig Kimbrel because obviously Craig Kimbrel was a great closer, but every time it would scare you and but he would still get it. That's how he was in the 2018 playoffs at least. But yeah, I will give Kenley credit because in his post game out in the field, he was accountable for himself. He said that he needs to stop throwing balls. and really attack hitters more. And I appreciate him owning up to that and recognizing that. Like, that is a good sign in the direction of him wanting to be better and wanting to be the dominant closer that he's been all of his career, the Hall of Fame closer he's been all of his career. So it's something to keep an eye on. I'm not a doctor. I don't really know how his back situation is going to progress throughout the season, but I wouldn't imagine that he's going to be magically better one day. I feel like it's going to be a problem that's going to plague him all year long. So it's more of a matter of figuring out how to manage it, how to deal with it, and how to still get out there and get saves, which, I mean, he did. So despite the back problems, he got out there and saved those two games. So I'll give him that. And he also, I think he saved the game. Yeah. In the Angels series as well. So good for him, I guess. And at least he didn't blow it. That's kind of the ending point on that. So yeah, you sweep the A's, big sweep, and then you go out to LA. You win game one, 8-6. Cutter Crawford, 4 2/3 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 5 Ks, another great start. Not to jump ahead of myself, but every single start that the Red Sox had on this West Coast trip was really good. There wasn't a single like bad meltdown start, so that's really nice. But back to that game one win. 4 runs in that game were given up off of errors. The grand slam that was given up happened because of errors kind of loading the bases there. The defense in that game was really bad. Was that the game, I believe it was, where Sadan Rafael dropped a ball that was right to him?
Yes.
Yeah. He gets a ball hit directly to him in center field, and he just takes his eye off it or something because it goes in his glove and just pops right out. Like, that was a little league play. That's something that I've done back in my playing days in Little League, where the ball's right to me. It's in my glove 1 second, then it's on the ground the next second. And you're looking at yourself like, what happened? Like, that was a can of corn, as they say. And he just put it on the ground. You cannot be doing that at the major league level. Right after that, Emmanuel Valdez has a bad error too. And then you get the grand slam. So that's the problem that plagued us all year last season. The stupid errors, the bad misplays, and shooting ourselves in the foot with those. That's what happened in this game. But, again, in contrast to last year, they win this game. That's a game they would have lost last year. Tyler O'Neill had 2 home runs in that game, so that helped a lot. We'll get into him more. Casas homered. Duran had a go-ahead homer in the 8th. Reese McGuire has been showing some power. He had a 2-run homer. People kept getting hit by pitches in that game. They threw, not intentionally, but Devers got hit. Sedan Rafaela got hit. And then, of course, that is the game.
Yeah, I got to cut you off. I got the hit by pitches was ridiculous throughout this entire Angels series. Devers gets hit in the wrist. Rafaela gets hit in the wrist. For a second there, it looked like both of them were going to be leaving the game. Not to mention, we'll talk about Trevor Story, but that was insult to injury as well. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't help when these Angels pitchers cannot control their pitches and people are getting plunked left and right. It happened throughout the entire series. I was very surprised that the Red Sox did not send a message back to the Angels once. I personally, maybe it's a little bit of an old school take, but when you're facing a team who is pitchers who cannot locate, who cannot throw the ball over the plate or cannot locate inside, and they keep hitting your guys in dangerous places like the wrist, you send one back at them. I'm sorry, that's how baseball works. And I was surprised that there was no retaliation from the Red Sox at any point during the series.
I agree with you. I mean, that's what we're talking about in our group chat. Old school baseball, someone's got to pay the price. Like, obviously, you're not going to go headhunting, but Mike Trout's got to wear one in the back or the thigh. Like, that's how good old baseball was played. And the fact that there was no retaliation, like, I guess good for the Red Sox. Nice for being stand-up guys and not hitting someone. But you got to do something because, like you said, Joey, Rafaela gets hit in the hand. I thought it was broken. Devers gets hit in the hand or the wrist, too. Also looked bad. And then they hit Tyler O'Neill, too, who's our best player right now. It's like, what are we doing? Come on, get the ball over the plate, like you said. So that was ridiculous. It just adds to how stupid that game was, too. But yeah, as I started to talk about Trevor Story, Mike Trout hits a ground ball through the third base shortstop gap. Trevor Story dives for it, lands awkwardly on his left glove shoulder, goes down immediately in very obvious pain. So dislocated shoulder for Trevor Story. I was very conflicted in that exact moment in time because I had a three-leg parlay going where Mike Trout hit was all I needed for it to hit, and Trevor Story diving for that ball and that ball getting through is what won me that bet. So it was kind of a moment of like joy followed by immediate just doom because Trevor Story's down screaming in pain and agony. Devers puts his hand on his head, and you knew that it was not going to be good. Like you knew in that moment, Trevor Story knew in that moment that this was going to be a serious injury. Trevor Story called it a significant injury after the game. And right now he sits on the 10-day IL with left shoulder dislocated shoulder. I, again, as I just said, am not a doctor, so I don't really know what the timeline necessarily will be, but Trevor Story was talking about how he hopes to play again this season, and he said it's a significant injury, so it's definitely something that's going to keep him out for a while. And it's a huge loss to the Red Sox. I feel terrible for Trevor Story because he's had so many problems being healthy since he signed with Boston. And this was the year where he was finally healthy, finally ready to be an everyday player. And his presence on the field is so valuable, not just from like a defensive standpoint, because his defense is outstanding at shortstop, and that's what we really needed after last year, but also just his leadership and his presence. Like him being out there on the field makes everybody better defensively just by him being there. So the loss of Trevor Story is detrimental to this Red Sox team. And it sucks to see. And I really hope that he can have a speedy recovery and be back to being healthy as soon as possible.
Yeah, those shoulder injuries are not good. I have a friend who had a very similar injury, and it's one of those where your shoulder can just kind of come out at any time. The same thing happened to Tatis a few years ago, where he had to completely change how he swung the bat because a one-hand follow-through would cause his shoulder to pop out. I know he had Story had an appointment today. To determine the severity of his injury to see if there was any internal damage. So we'll see what the news is on that. But regardless, it doesn't look good. If you're hoping to see Trevor Story this year, I don't even know if that's possible because it is a very bad injury, especially you have a lot of important ligaments in your shoulder. So if one of those is messed up, there's virtually no chance he comes back this year. It really sucks on a million different levels, both personally and on the field. His defense already this year, he was making web jams all over the place. He looked amazing at shortstop. He looked healthy. We can, that's not to say that we didn't rag on him because he was still trying to find his footing at the plate. But the thing is, it's early in the season and it sucks that. He may never get a chance to play at Fenway, a stadium that really suits him very well. And hopefully he comes back sooner than we think. But at this point, it really sucks because he's not going to be in the near future plans. So what do you do at shortstop? Because we know how bad a bad defense affects you at shortstop. So what are you going to do moving forward? That's a huge question mark. There are a lot of ways to combat that. We can talk about that later, but I still don't know if there is a best option going forward.
Well, there's definitely no good option. Like Trevor Story was here to be the shortstop, and I've talked about how he was really, in my opinion, the X factor of this team going into the season because he was the anchor in your lineup. Like you know what Devers and Casas and Duran and Yoshida, like all those guys, those are all lefties, and Devers or not Devers, sorry, the Story was the right-handed bat who's supposed to break that up. I talked about it in the A's series where he was facing the lefty and he had two doubles. That's what we needed him for. Be that righty in the lineup who can face left-handed pitching and break up the lefties in the lineup. And so the loss, like you said, Joey, and as all Red Sox fans know, is huge. And to what you started talking about, there is really no great option for his replacement. Obviously, Pablo Reyes was the one who stepped up and came in after Story left the game. David Hamilton was called up from AAA, who ended up having a great season debut game. But he's no Trevor Story defensively by any means. He's below league average defensively. So what is the solution? People have pointed to Vaughn Grissom, who again acquired in the Chris Sale trade. He is still coming back from his injury and is yet to be ready, yet to go through his spring training regimen. But he is a guy who has an ability to play shortstop, not necessarily great shortstop, but he can physically stand there and field the ball sometimes. And then what does that mean for second base, though? Because Grissom was supposed to be your everyday second baseman. I guess Valdez plays more. You know how his defense is. So automatically, your whole team becomes worse defensively. People talked about putting Rafaela at short because he can play short too. Then you lose that stud in center field. So no matter what move you make, your overall defense is gonna take a hit. And like we've talked about, that is the biggest issue with the Boston Red Sox. That's what kept us out of the playoffs last year and hurt us by losing 8 to 10 games more than we should have. That's what has already plagued us this season with different error problems. And it's going to be a bigger issue now that Story's out. And I don't know how to really address that other than like your defense is just going to be worse.
Yeah, Grissom, I don't see being a shortstop. I know he played shortstop with the Braves, but he is defensively limited. And as we know from last year, shortstop is not a position where you try to get by. You need to have somebody who's sound defensively. And I think Grissom really slots in well at second base because another huge takeaway on the West Coast trip is that Emmanuel Valdez cannot play Major League second base. He can't.
Nope.
The liability out there, he struggles making the throw to first base. So this is going to be a very interesting situation moving forward. I think if you ask me right now, my opinion would be to put Rafaela at shortstop because at least he's going to give you elite defense. I know you lose that in center field, but Duran was he was solid. He was league average at center field last year. And that's also a position where you can't sacrifice your defense, but it's kind of a pick your poison. I think at the moment, you got to see what you have in Rafaela at shortstop maybe 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah. I mean, Rafaela's game is his glove, and that's going to be at any position you put him. Like, he's going to be great defensively at shortstop, theoretically. Like, obviously, he hasn't proven that at major league level to the degree that he has in center field, but he can field. He is a competent fielder wherever he is, and it's going to be better than David Hamilton or Vaughn Grissom or Emmanuel Valdez. So, I think
Oh,
that's an.
one more quick note. I
Go
saw
ahead.
today that the Red Sox confirmed that Marcelo Meyer is not even an option. So
Yeah.
for those out there, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah. No, thanks for bringing that up. He is in double A, so pump the brakes. He's not the solution. Maybe if he has a good minor league season, you could see him in September, but he's not the solution right now. But I was gonna say how I think shortstop is the most key position for this team where you need good defense because last year you saw with Kike Hernandez there, it made Rafael Devers worse defensively. Because Devers felt like he had to cover more ground and he didn't have a rock next to him that could support him and get to balls and be a defensive strength. So it's going to make Devers worse. You don't have a good defensive second baseman. So if you have a bad shortstop defensively and a bad second baseman defensively, the whole middle of the infield is messed up. You're going to have problems turning double plays, as you saw already in Anaheim. And it's just going to make the whole team worse defensively. So, it literally pains me to talk about how much of a loss this is for the Red Sox because of how excited I was to have Trevor Story there and being that defensive wizard at shortstop. So, the Red Sox are definitely going to miss him, and it'll be interesting to see how they try to cover that. But I guess to put a bow on it, it was nice to see them go out and win 12-2 a couple games later to show that the offense still can hit without Trevor Story. Obviously, Trevor Story wasn't necessarily on fire at the plate, but he was kind of contributing. So yeah, it's just another hole they have to fill with not a lot of depth to do it. I don't know why I'm bringing this up now, but it just came to mind. They sent Bobby Dalbec down, so anyone who's thinking Bob stop, not gonna happen. We will not be seeing Bobby Dalbec as Trevor Story's replacement at shortstop.
They announced the corresponding move as well. It's Romy Gonzalez.
Good, as it should be. Who he's been hot at the plate, I believe. I think he was leading the Red Sox in homers last time I checked. I don't think he was hitting for average. Let me pull his stats up. I don't know how he is defensively, though. That's what I'd like to know. Because if he's good defensively, then by all means, get out there. Yeah, he had
I
five
was.
homers and 27 RBIs. Oh, that's his career regular season?
I got
Wow.
it. So he's hitting 321 with an 1196 OPS in AAA through seven
Thank
games
you.
with three homers, 10 RBIs. He's a second baseman. He can play a little short. He's not. I was trying to figure out, I was doing some research before the pod on what his defense looked like. He's played all over the place, but he's primarily second base, where he is above average defensively. However, at shortstop, he doesn't have a lot of range from what I've seen. That's why he is a second baseman. He can fill in at shortstop, but it's kind of similar to Pablo Reyes, where he's like, yeah, he can play the position, but he's not necessarily a competent defender. I would say he's a step below average. So what are you really getting out of that position? Probably nothing.
Yeah, you're just gonna have to piece it together. I mean, Pablo Reyes, I think, is a decent fielder, and so whatever combination they use kind of day to day between Hamilton, Reyes, Gonzalez, then when Grissom comes back, it's all right. It's gonna fill the gap. It's not gonna be Trevor Story's level, but I will say that Romy Gonzalez does have a 1,000 fielding percentage at shortstop. He has never made an error at shortstop at the major league level in seven full innings of playing at shortstop. So. Big news right there. That might have just been last year. I really confused myself when I was looking at his stats because whatever. Anyways, I want to move on from that and get to game two of that Angels series. Oh, real quick, one other thing I'll say about that game one. I said that the A's game where they won extra innings was the worst feeling win. No. This was the
No.
worst feeling win, 100%. This game felt like a loss, but we won somehow. You have Trevor Story getting hurt. You have a ton of bad errors and stupid errors, and you have everyone getting hit by pitches. That was the most loss feeling win ever. But again, theme of the podcast, a win is a win, and that's what it was. So can't ask for anything more there. Game two, you lose. I really don't have many notes here. Yeah, Reed Detmers struck us out 12 times. Whitlock was good, 4 1/3, no runs. But, you know, we only had 3 hits. And the runs that we did give up, the two, were given up on an error. So it's a loss, but it's not. You only gave up 2 runs and they were unearned. So realistically, it's not that bad. It's just the offense didn't hit. So pitching wise, you're still looking great. That's all I got on that. But then game three was the big one. That you needed a game like that to wrap up the trip, wrap up the series, win the series.
Happy
12
flight.
to 2. 12 to 2. Hauk was once again outstanding. I said that he was going to have the lowest ERA of all Red Sox pitchers, and he hasn't allowed a run yet. Knock on wood. But 6 innings pitched, 0 runs, 7 Ks from Tanner Hauk, looking great once again. David Hamilton, as I mentioned earlier, hit a homer, his first homer at the major league level. Congratulations to him. Rafael Devers homered, and then Tyler O'Neill homered. Those three homers all happened in the third inning. That was fun to watch. And then Reese McGuire, powerhouse bat in the sixth inning, also goes deep. He had 5 RBIs total in that game. We scored 4 runs in the ninth inning. Rafaela had 2 hits, 2 RBIs, including a triple as a pinch hitter. So that, from an offensive standpoint, was outstanding. Chase Anderson out of the bullpen was pretty good too. He did allow 2 runs, but you know, he's been doing the job as the cleanup guy, the innings eater guy. He's got 2 saves on the season by going 3 innings in those 2 games. So all around, this was a great game. Reese McGuire, I do want to talk about because I did not expect this at all. We talk about how Reese McGuire is the king of just slapping the ball the other way for a single, and then this power just came out of nowhere, and he has 2 homers on the season already. He had a big game in that last game in the series with 5 RBIs. If you're getting that production from your backup catcher, that is all you can ask for and more. Like, that is outstanding.
I mean, the way things are going, McGuire has looked a million times more competent at the plate than Wong has to start the season. Obviously, Wong's defense is a lot better, but I was actually diving into this defensive metrics today to see what the gap was defensively. Wong, obviously, his arm is 100 times better. He's one of the best catchers in baseball at throwing out runners, but McGuire is actually a better framer than Wong. So it's a situation now where the Red Sox can go with whoever they really want at catcher. Me personally, I love the way that Reese McGuire looks at the plate and the way that the offense has looked to open the season a little sluggish. You kind of have to take as much as you can get. So I think we're going to be seeing a lot more Reese McGuire going forward. It doesn't necessarily mean that Wong is never going to play because he is the more valuable catcher defensively, but it's an interesting problem, or it's a good problem to have. It's an interesting situation.
Yeah, ride the hot bat. If your backup catcher is going to go out there and hit two-run, three-run homers, then by all means, keep playing. You love to see it, especially when you have him down in the eight spot, the nine spot. It's giving a jolt to offense in the bottom of your lineup. It's huge. So he wasn't even going to be on the team necessarily. There was a debate whether it was going to be Roberto Perez or Reese McGuire, and he's taken advantage of the fact that he's been given another opportunity to stay catching here for the big league team. So good for him. Great for the Red Sox. And that game overall is just fantastic. Rafaela having two hits and two RBIs coming off the bench as a pinch hitter. That's awesome. I don't even, have we mentioned yet that he got an extension? I meant to kind of lead the show with that and we just
No,
didn't.
that's
But
kind of the biggest news.
well, I guess I'll bring it up now since I mentioned it. But as of like 10 minutes before we started recording, Rafaela agreed to a 8-year, $50 million contract extension with the Red Sox. Locking up the young guys is something the Red Sox have struggled to do in past years, but we're on a streak right now. We talked about it when Bayo signed his extension, where you got Devers locked up, you got Bayo locked up. Now you get Rafaela, who has shown so far this season that he can be an electric player for you. So getting him for the next 8 years is huge. I believe he's 23. So that takes him to his 31 age season. There is no negatives. Well, that I'm not going to say that. Let me rephrase that. There is you can't hate on a deal like this because you sign a young guy to an 8-year contract. It's only 50 million. Like all in all, Coley Mick was saying on Twitter how JBJ made like 55 million in his whole career. And we talked about how Rafaela's floor is Jackie Bradley Jr. So you're sitting pretty good with that. And there is so much potential for Rafaela to outperform this contract. Because you know what he can do defensively. If he can show consistently that he can be an offensive weapon as he has been this season, then he is a all-star level player, a game-changing player, and he's in Boston for the next 8 years. You gotta love that.
It's incredible. I'm very surprised with how quickly they pulled the trigger on this extension, but that's a good thing because if he continues on the track he's on, he's going to be worth a lot more than the money that you gave him. 50 years or 50 million over 8 years is about 6.25 million a year. He's worth that amount just based off of his defense. And given the fact that he is 23 years old and you just bought out all 6 years of arbitration plus 2 years of free agency, it's a great value. It's the trend in baseball now. I'm beyond thrilled that the Red Sox pulled the trigger on this. I beyond just the fact that it's that we know that Rafaela is going to be here for the next 8 years, it shows that the front office knows what they're doing. They've been able to identify the trends in baseball, and they're now applying that to players that they see as being good over the next few years. So there's obviously going to be more to come. I think we all know that with our young players. Get the Casas one done. That's the one at the top of the list still. But this is a great move. It's a win-win on both sides. So
Exactly. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. And I'm just excited to keep watching him play because he is my favorite type of player is the exact player that he is. It's the Jaren Duran type, the Mookie Betts type, the the player that can hit for power. He also has speed and he can make great plays in the outfield. Like, it's a five tool player. That's what it is. And yeah, I'm very happy that he's here to stay. So to wrap up the whole series recaps here, 7-3 on the West Coast, 12-2 game to end it. A lot of momentum coming back to Fenway. Just some stats that I got from JP Long on Twitter that I want to throw out there. Red Sox currently lead the majors with a 1.49 staff ERA. That's the franchise's lowest mark ever through the first 10 games. I think just through 10 games in general. It's the lowest ERA for any team through 10 games since the 2005 Marlins and the lowest for an AL team since the 1982 Angels. Of those pitchers, you have Tanner Houck. Tanner Houck's last three starts in the regular season, 6 innings, 0 runs. He is one of four pitchers in the live ball era to make three consecutive starts of 6-plus innings and 0 runs and 4 hits or fewer. Those four players are Tanner Houck, Chris Sale, Tim Wakefield, Pedro Martinez. So he is an elite company on that list. Love to see it. And finally, Nick Pivetta has a 0.36 ERA in his last four starts. In those four starts, 25 innings pitched, 30 strikeouts, 3 walks, and just 1 run. Red Sox players to make 4 consecutive starts of 5-plus innings with those 1 run or less. Nick Pivetta. Once again, Chris Sale, Pedro Martinez, Lee Strange, Text Houston, and Cy Young. Were you a big Tex Houston guy?
Oh, Houston? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, big that is Tex. Jersey. Yep, that's what they call them. So there are some stats for you. And now I do want to talk about Tyler O'Neill, because Tyler O'Neill is literally engulfed in flames, red hot. He's sending balls into orbit. He leads the league in OPS with a 1.407 OPS, leads the league in slugging percentage at 0.893. He's tied for the lead league in homers with 5, tied with Mookie Betts, pretty good. Second in runs with 11. He has a weighted runs created plus of 281, which I discovered what that was about a week ago. It's runs per plate appearance, averaged to 100 value scale. So I know the stat people out there know what I'm saying there. And he's the first Red Sox player to have at least 5 homers and a .500 on base percentage through the first 10 games for the Red Sox. I just threw a lot of stats at you right there. Hope you can digest them all. But basically, they point to the Red Sox are hot right now, and Tyler O'Neill is giving you everything you could have asked for and more. You traded for him in the offseason, and this is a guy who was in top 10 in MVP voting a couple years ago, had some injury problems, some problems with the manager in St. Louis, and you got, I think, a great deal for him. I don't even remember who we traded for him because that's how insignificant it was.
It was Nick Robertson. He was the reliever that you got for Kike Hernandez. So,
in a way, you can say you traded Kike Hernandez for Tyler O'Neill, in a way. And that's great right there, because Tyler O'Neill, similar to what I just described as my favorite type of player, is the type of player who is good on all sides of the ball and can be explosive with speed. So if he can, his whole thing is health. If Tyler O'Neill can stay healthy, I don't see a reason why he can't be a very valuable player for us. Like, I don't necessarily think he'll keep up this pace. If he does, he's winning AL MVP, and I'm all here for that. Talk about bold predictions from the predictions episode. I should have said that Tyler O'Neill wins AL MVP because that's what he's on pace for right now. But yeah, you cannot overstate how huge Tyler O'Neill has been for the Red Sox lately, especially with Trevor Story not being super hot to start out and then obviously going down with the injury. I was talking about how you need a right-handed bat who can really be a presence in that lineup. That's what Tyler O'Neill has done. Cora's already been moving him up to the 3-hole and the 4-hole. So Tyler O'Neill, get to know his name, because he's really making a name for himself in Boston. He's having a Adam Duvall type start to the season, like Adam Duvall had last year, but even better. I said that he's like Hunter Renfroe in my mind, but so far even better. So I am all on board the Tyler O'Neill train. I'm his biggest fan right now. He's my favorite player on the Red Sox because he's just so fun to watch. Obviously, he had that two homer game out in LA. He has just been on fire, and the league has taken notice.
You can't say a bad thing about Tyler O'Neill. I love that man. He's amazing. Every single day I wake up and Tyler O'Neill does something to amaze me.
Yeah. I wake up in the morning, the first thing on my mind is I can't wait to see what Tyler O'Neill does today.
Yeah, today was actually the worst day ever because I don't get to see Tyler O'Neill play baseball.
Exactly. You know, today was eclipse day. We literally didn't see the sun today because Tyler O'Neill wasn't playing baseball. The eclipse was just the baseball he sent into orbit yesterday. That was just up there.
Yeah, the universe was also mad that Tyler O'Neill didn't play baseball today.
Yeah, no Tyler, no sun. How do you like that?
True that.
SeatGeek is my favorite ticket provider out there for all sports, concert shows, and more. Not only do they have fantastic deals, but they also provide you with tools to make sure you're getting great tickets. They give you a grade for each ticket price so you can be confident you're getting the best value possible. They show you the view from the seat so you can know what you're getting ahead of time. And you get the tickets right on your phone, making it all easy. With their wide selection of tickets, SeatGeek knocks it out of the park when it comes to buying tickets. Plus, you can get $20 off your first purchase with SeatGeek by using our promo code Dugout.
DUG, OUT, dugout. Sox are back in town. Finally, the season's been underway for about 3 months now, and the Sox are finally playing baseball at Fenway Park. Get out there.
I forgot they had a home field. I thought we were just supposed to be the away team for every single game. That's what my club baseball team last year, we didn't have a home field, so we were the away team. I thought that just spread to the Red Sox. Since that club team went 0-15, I'm glad that we have a home field and we're back at Fenway. We are facing a very good Orioles team to start out at Fenway, however. Good on paper. They do have a 5-4 record, but they do have some really good players. You know, Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson has become one of my favorite players in the league to watch. So let's break it down what we're looking at for this 3-game Baltimore series. Oh, real quick, I do want to say that I don't think I predicted it on the podcast because we didn't preview the Angel series. But on my Instagram, I did say that the Red Sox were going to win the first one, lose the second one, and then win the third one. We also, I said sweep for the A's. So I think we should start keeping track of our predictions just to see who's hot, because we're looking pretty good. Did we say split for the Mariners series too? I feel like we
I
might
think we
have.
did.
We definitely did. So I
I
don't know about
think I
you.
think for the Mariners, I said they would win.
We didn't get the
No.
games right, but.
No. I did whatever. It's too far in the past.
Anyways, we can keep track going forward. But so, home opener. It's basically like opening day. You got Brian Bello out there starting for us against Corbin Burns, who is very good at pitching. So that's a tough one right there. I.
Main thing I'm looking for with Bayo in this game, keep the ball on the ground, stop throwing the 2-run homer pitch. Obviously runs are hard to come by off of Burns, but Bayo, this is a good measuring stick performance, just like opening day, where he's going up against another one of the better pitchers in baseball. Can he keep the Sox in this game? Yeah, it's a tough one. It's hard to beat Corbin Burns. He's fitting in very well with the O's. I might have to take the L on game one.
Yeah, so Corbin Burns is a strikeout pitcher, and the Red Sox have kind of had a strikeout problem this year. They struck out 12 times to Reed Detmers. I think they're going to get bested by Corbin Burns, so I'm going to go loss as well. I'd like to point out that in Tyler O'Neill has the most at-bats against Burns in his career with 11, and he's batting 0-91. So your best player can't really hit Burns. Yeah, that's a loss for me. It's going to be unfortunate because it's probably going to be a really like fun day because you have the 04 team coming back to celebrate the 20-year anniversary of that. You have the home opener. It's always exciting. I hope Fenway is going to be packed. But yeah, I think they're going to go out there and disappoint the Fenway faithful for the first one. It happens. It's fine. Whatever. Game two. Nick Pivetta against Cole Irvin. Irvin is a left-handed pitcher, which the Red Sox have had problems with this year. So that's something to consider. Also, the Orioles have seen Nick Pivetta a lot. They have a lot of at-bats against him. However, you know, Austin Hayes is 0 for 18 against him. Some of the other players are decent against him. But Nick Pivetta has been dealing to start the year. Oh, I don't know how I want to go on this because
Sox. Give me the Sox. Cole Irvin is a 7.20 ERA. Give me the Sox.
I worry about them facing the lefty, but I don't think they're going to lose back-to-back games. I trust Nick Pivetta. It's going to be a low-scoring game. They'd probably win like 3-1, 3-2. So I think Kenley will scare us in the ninth, per usual. But yeah, I'll go Sox win there. Why not? Live a little. Game three. So right now we're at a split series. So this is the deciding game in our predictions here. We got Carter Crawford out there against a very good pitcher, Grayson Rodriguez. I think we're gonna lose. I think we might lose
I
this one.
don't.
Okay.
The Cutter Crawford, he's my Cy Young pick. He's gonna keep the Sox in this game. This one's gonna be another low scoring one. Runs are gonna be hard to come by. I think we're gonna scrape some across once we get to the Orioles bullpen, even though their bullpen is also really good.
Yeah. I mean,
Just work
don't get
some
me
at
wrong.
bats.
I hope they win it, but you know, I really hope that what I'm about to say gets proven totally wrong, but the Red Sox rotation has just been so good. I feel like it's gonna have to average out at some point. Not saying that they're gonna like totally fall apart, but I feel like Cutter's got to give up more than just like one run here. It's just bound to happen. The Red Sox kind of didn't play the best at Fenway last year anyways. I hope that the Red Sox sweep the Orioles in this home opener series, but I think that the Red Sox are due to lose a series, and people are gonna get mad at me for saying that, but that's just what I think is gonna happen. However, we do play the Angels again right after that, and I think that's a great time to sweep them, if not win the series again. So I don't like when we do that. Like we just played the Angels. I don't want to see them again. I want to see new players. I don't want to see Anthony Rendon up there swinging the bat. I hate that guy. I hate watching him play. I'm livid that his first hit since July was given up by the Red Sox. I really want us to keep him hitless and have someone else do that. But whatever. To get back on topic, though, I think that we lose 2 out of 3 to the Orioles. Joey thinks we win 2 out of 3 to the Orioles. So I hope Joey's right, personally.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope we sweep them.
Good point. Good point. Let's go for the sweep. I feel like we should
Yeah, it
probably.
is stupid that we're doing the entire season series against the Angels in a week, basically. And then next week, it's four against Cleveland, three against
Oh,
Pittsburgh, and
yeah.
another three against Cleveland.
I said it when they came out with the schedule. These schedule makers are terrible at their job. Like, this is an awful. Starting on the West Coast, not playing the Yankees until like June. This back and forth playing the same teams, it's just ridiculous. It should not be like this. I don't want to see the Cleveland Guardians twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
Not even.
seven games against Cleveland in like 9 days. No
Yeah,
thanks.
that's terrible. Whatever. I feel like we should preview the Angels series just because we won't be recording until that Monday. Why not? Let's get into it. We got TBD versus TBD. Yeah, we can't preview these. We don't have pitchers.
Yeah.
But yeah, give me 2 out of 3
Some
against the
things
Angels
to
too.
look
Why not?
for on the homestand. This is a new
There you
segment.
go. Yep.
Yeah, some things to look for, Sox fans, if you're gonna watch the Sox. I would say the biggest thing is to keep looking for the pitching to continue to dominate. like Jason said, it were it they've been so unbelievably good that you're kind of stuck wondering when are they gonna just, regress to the mean. But Andrew Bailey is starting to get the recognition nationally now. I saw MLB Network was gushing over him and the job that he's done so far. So that's definitely something to look for. Another big thing would be the lineup construction, in my opinion, because Trevor Story was hitting third, and we had some off-air debates that he should not be hitting third and that Tyler O'Neill should. So now that spot is opened up. But what do you do at the bottom of the lineup with your righties? Because you don't have a whole lot of them. Obviously, Rafael is going to be playing every day now. Another thing to look for, Willier Abreu, will he be on this team the next time that we record? I was surprised that the first Woo Sox transaction of the year was not him, because I think he would be better off in AAA, getting regular everyday at bats so that he can work on his things and eventually get back to the majors.
I agree with you, but who would you call up to take a spot? Because Gonzalez and Hamilton are already up, and those are your two main depth
Exactly.
guys.
So I think things would have been different if Story didn't get hurt, actually, because
Right.
Hamilton, I was surprised that Hamilton was the first one called up and not Gonzalez, just because of the major league experience with Romy. But now that both of them are up there, David Hamilton is really fun to watch because he can fly. The only problem is he can never get on base.
He also
He's
cannot throw
a
the ball.
weird player. He's a weird player because he's so fast, but he can, like in AAA, he hits bombs. So that's
Yeah.
something to look for. If David
I mean, I'll
Hamilton,
take it. I'll take bombs.
if he can get on base at a decent clip, he could end up being a very good player.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that he's a terrible option to be kind of filling in. It's just the defense, as we talked about, but he's been an exciting young guy who he's going to get somewhat of a consistent shot for a little bit at least. It'll be interesting to see.
I can't lie, I thought his numbers from last year were better than they ended up being. He was
Oh
not.
no, he was awful. Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember he had like one game last year against the Twins where he like stole like three bases or something, two bases, his only two stolen bases, maybe. That was fun.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not excited about him because of his major league stats. I'm excited about him. He had 70 stolen bases in 2022 with Portland. He had 57 last year, 52 in his first minor league season. That's what I'm excited about. He can steal bases like that. He had 17 bombs in AAA last year, 12 in 2022. Doesn't really hit for average, but he can be a solid player in that regard. So, I love. I've been saying it ever since the Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins coach, talked about how speed is all he looks for. Not all he looks for, but like that's what he wants to do is just put the fastest guys out there with Tyreek Hill and Raheem Mostert, and not to get into football, but I really liked that mentality, and I was like, that's a good point. You get speedy, athletic guys out there, good things are going to happen, and that's what the Red Sox are piecing together right now. Jarren Duran, Tyler O'Neill, Rafaela, David Hamilton now. You get a bunch of guys who can run, magic's going to happen on the base paths. Runs are going to be scored. Even if your defense isn't the best, speed helps you get to the ball. So when you misplay the ball and it's 20 feet behind you, you can run and get to it faster. So that helps you. But yeah, so that's why I think that David Hamilton's an interesting guy, like you said, to pay attention to in this homestand. I like this segment. I think this is something that we should keep doing. Good on the fly call there. Oh, I was also going to say to address my question about who would come up if Abreu gets sent down. You have two guys coming back from injury hopefully soon in Rob Refsnyder and Vaughn Grissom. So I think Refsnyder is probably the guy that would come up per se for Abreu to go down. I don't really know how far out he is from coming back, but
Haven't heard anything about him.
I'm excited to have Rob back because he's the lefty killer and we struggle against lefties. So we need. My favorite bet last year was any time that we were facing a lefty, just over half a hit, over 1.5 total bases for Rob Refsnyder, because he was just out there getting hits against lefties. So I'm excited for him to come back. And I think that move will make sense corresponding with Abreu being sent down. So whenever he comes back from the dead, wherever he is right now. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to touch on here before we wrap it up?
It's gonna be good to see Wally. I haven't seen Wally in a while. I miss him.
Yeah, I also miss Wally. Um,
If you're going to Fenway, they have real ketchup now. Congratulations.
oh
Enjoy it.
yeah, that's huge. I'm excited for my first game back at Fenway to experience that. That reminded me. Have you seen this commercial that Nesson does? It's not even a commercial. Like, Dave O'Brien does an ad read during like the broadcast for like Mike's Famous Mayo or mustard or something.
Oh, yeah.
Every time that comes on, I'm like, is this real? Like, it feels like a bit. Like, Mike's Famous Mayo, Dave O'Brien reading it while like Rafael Devers is that bad. Like, what is this? There's so many
quick
like
update on Vonn
fake
Grissom and Rob
sponsors. Yeah.
Refsnyder. This is from a couple, this is from a week ago, but Alex Cora is hopeful that Grissom and Refsnyder will be ready to play minor league games after they come up to Boston for the home opener. So Grissom's target date of mid to late April hasn't changed. I'm assuming that is the same with Rob.
Yeah, so that kind of fits with the timeline. Sorry, I'm still on the Mayo thing. It's actually Mike's Amazing, not
Oh,
Mike's
Mike's
Famous.
amazing.
Yeah. Either way, I don't really know why Dave O'Brien is having to do an ad read for them, but you know, whatever.
What? I just found this out. I was just on Twitter. Jenny Dell was on my campus today, and I didn't know.
Was she just hanging out or?
He was speaking on my campus today, and I did not know. I would have gone. Or was this last night? Maybe it was last night. The UMass Amherst annual awards dinner. Dang, wow, that sucks. I could have
Oh.
asked her thoughts on the socks.
Hey, Jenny. Socks?
Jenny.
Thoughts on the socks? That'll do it for this week on the In the Dugout podcast. thanks for listening. We will see you next week after the Orioles series and after we play the Angels again. If you didn't get enough of them, don't worry, they're coming back. So
I personally
we'll
did. I'm sick of them.
yeah, me too. But either way, we'll be talking about them next week. Until then, go Sox.